This is FBG Jen
and FBG Kristen.
And I'm FBG Margot, host and producer. You're listening to the podcast that will help you keep a lid on the junk in the trunk and inspire you to live a happy and confident life.
Each episode, we chat with motivational experts and celebs and share our own candid adventures in being healthy.
If you're looking for a podcast that's equal parts hilarious and enlightening, well, then welcome to the Fit Bottoms Girls podcast.
Welcome back to the Fit Bottom Girls podcast. And today we have an incredible interview with Jessamine Stanley. She has a new book called Everybody Yoga. And on the line today we have Jen.
Hey guys.
And we have Kristen.
Hi.
And this is Margot. And actually, Jen, you were not on this interview. It was Kristen and I. And I don't know about you, Kristen. I was just completely enchanted with Jessamine. I just thought she was incredible.
Same. Well, I feel like I'm saying that for all of these, but I was really looking forward to talking to her. I was really excited because she's a fellow advocate of embracing yourself and loving yourself exactly as you are in this very moment. And she had some really powerful and beautiful things to say about that and how that relates to yoga and just to her life experience in general.
And she's a great talker. I mean, she really is. She's so wise but yet so down to earth. Like, you can tell she's still learning too, like who she is and what she thinks of the world and stuff like that. It was just a privilege to speak to her.
Her Instagram account is
everything.
Awesome. It is.
And, it really is.
Yeah. And I know that we'll talk about this a little bit in the interview, but I think it's probably worth noting here. We have something in common with her, Jen.
Yes.
She is another person who is going to be having a program at 1440 Multiversity, which is something we are doing in August. Yeah. And I don't know. Have we talked about that on here before?
No, go for it.
I don't think so. I think it's totally new. Did you touch on in the interview with her? Do you guys touch on what she's doing in her program?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, but let's talk about us. Go for it.
Yeah. So ours will be we're calling it like an FBG retreat. It's kind of like a multiple day immersion at this new place called 1440 Multiversity, which is literally in the California Redwoods. It's a brand new facility. It's beautiful and very natural and a whole bunch of like outdoor space and just a beautiful, like definitely go to 1440.org and you can see images. But it's like newly built and they're having all these amazing health experts and stuff come out. And we are like, Chris and I are so honored because they asked us to do a program and we're like, sure, we would love to.
Yeah.
So we're going to take a couple days and just walk people through. I mean, loving themselves, getting healthy for the right reasons, getting in touch with why you want to get healthy, and really just kind of like the ins and outs of what it is to kind of live the Fit Bottom Girl lifestyle and kind of embrace our mission.
Absolutely.
And have fun with people that are like-minded,
Oh, my God, it's going to be so fun.
Yeah.
And it's for anybody who's like, ooh, that sounds like a thing that I would want to do. And is that you? I bet that's you. That it's going to be taking place August 11th through 13th, which is a Friday through Sunday. And all that information is on the 1440 site. And I guess we'll probably include some information on this in the show notes too, just so it's easy access. But I mean, the price point is super reasonable. And we're going to be talking nutrition, fitness, like let's go for a hike, y'all. Like, it's going to be so fun. I honestly.
We're going to hang out. Yeah.
We're still going to hang out. You might even get a hug from me by the end of this.
No.
That's how excited and like just fuzzy I'm feeling about it.
It's worth the price for the ticket just for that possibility of getting a hug from you.
I mean, they are a little.
You are hug-averse. You've been saying that before.
Yes.
Yes. But I'm just beyond pumped for this.
Yeah. Come hang out with us.
Yeah.
In the trees.
Yeah.
In the trees.
Let's
have
some trees together.
In the trees.
And I don't know have you guys ever been to the Redwoods before? It's just everything you think it's going to be and more.
It's a spiritual experience. I mean, they're so big and massive and old and beautiful and like the air is different. The sound is different. It's just, it's an incredible experience.
Yeah, I love it up there. That's one of the things I miss about living in Northern California was having access to that. So I'm jealous, but I'm excited for all of you that get to go. So definitely I will put that in the show notes. And I wanted to talk to you guys today about Jessamyn opens the interview. She talks about her very first Bikram yoga experience. That was her very first yoga experience was Bikram, which is, if you don't know, that's super hot yoga. Like, there's hot yoga and then there's Bikram, and Bikram is a whole other level. And the very first yoga class she did that, and it was just did not go so well for her. But then she went back to yoga. Now she tries different things. So I wanted to ask you guys what was your most either unusual yoga experience, or have you experienced Bikram yoga, and what was that like? So Jen, you go first.
Okay, I have two. So one of the times I had done yoga, and there's so many different styles of yoga, it's kind of difficult to like know what you're getting into if you like, you're like, oh, I tried yoga and I didn't like it. Mm-hmm. And then you don't do it again when you're like, no, you just need to try about a million different types of yoga and then you will find an instructor or type that, you know, kind of jives with you. But I went in, Aaron and I acted back like, God, I want to say FBG was like 1 year old. Like it was in 2009. I flew out to California. That's when Aaron was living there, and we went to a Bikram yoga class. And A, I'd never done yoga for 90 minutes. Bikram's always 90 minutes. And B, I had obviously never done yoga when it was like 100 plus degrees in a room. And so we're like, we're in good shape. We can do this. We were both like, I mean, I came out of there feeling like I was like hungover. I mean, it was like an intense situation. And I will say that poor Jessamyn. Like I can imagine if that was your first experience with yoga, that it would be a little too extreme. So it's not one that I would recommend as your first time. My second kind of like strange story was I know it's common practice that a lot of yoga instructors at the end of class will like come over and like touch you. You know, they'll like give you like a little like mini massage. Or you guys know what I'm talking about?
Mm-mm.
Or yeah. A little mini massage, or they'll do like an essential oil or like something. Well, I had been doing like yoga DVDs. So obviously I'd never been like in an actual studio with an instructor, and I'd never had that done. And I remember going to one class and just laying there, and the instructor, and a lot of times now when I go to classes and they do this, they'll be like, hey, if you don't, you know, feel comfortable being touched, like please let me know, da 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 da. This instructor never said anything, and I didn't know this was a thing at yoga classes.
Oh, no.
So, like, I know. So I'm just laying there, you know, at the end in corpse pose, like totally zenned out or whatever. And I mean, I about jumped out of my skin. I was not expecting to be touched. Like, I was so startled. Yeah, it was a really awkward situation for her and me. Because I was like, oh, I didn't realize you were going to touch me, you know.
Oh, no.
And then, I mean, like, my relaxation was gone at that point. I kind of disrupted the class. And, you know, then she's like, okay. And I'm like, well, yeah, you can massage my shoulders. I'm totally okay with that. But then I wasn't really chill. So.
No, that shit needs like an introduction, you know, like you can't, cause my first couple of classes I went to, I hated when the instructor would either come around and like touch me to help me get in a better position.
Yeah.
Or when they would do that at the end. And to be honest, now I really appreciate it and enjoy it because I've like yoga is one of the places where I really leave my ego at the door.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, but early days, that was really difficult. And I think that, you know, that, and I just, as I was just discussing with the hugging, I'm not, I have a bit of a bubble and I don't really like letting people in there out of the blue. So yeah, like if you're an instructor out there and you have anyone who's never been to your class before, if you're a touchy one, like a heads up is awesome. And the option to not be touched if you really are uncomfortable with it is awesome. But if you're doing yoga and this is freaking you out, like don't be freaked out. It's actually great. It's really relaxing. One of my favorite things is when, have you guys had it where they, when you're in corpse pose and they like kind of tug on your feet to get a little more space along your spine?
I love that.
Oh,
I love that.
It's almost orgasmic. That's not creepy. No one's ever met me in their class. But I do.
Well, the next time we go to yoga together, Kristen.
It's going to be exciting.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so here, you know, I live, as I've mentioned probably 900 times, I live fairly close to the beach. And there's an instructor here who does a full moon yoga flow class on the full moon each month, on or close to, depending on the weather. Sometimes we get rained out. But that's, it's really fantastic, and it's nice because it, depending on how cloudy it is, you know, it can be kind of dark, but you're there, like you can hear the waves. Being on the beach at night is just a different experience in general anyway. Mm-hmm. But, and then doing yoga on sand is, I mean, you want to talk about humbling. It's just a really different experience, but it's a really beautiful feeling of like being outdoors, experiencing nature, you know, being among other people who are there for the same purpose. Other than one time when we had a random drunk guy walk by, and I swear to God, he sounded like Cookie Monster. Disruptive. But other than that, it's been really awesome. And then she also gives us a piece of chocolate at the end, which does not hurt. Mm-mm. But yeah, like, and the first time I went, I was like, this is way outside my comfort zone because, you know, like doing yoga on sand is hard and I don't know other people who are going and what if it's weird? And no, it was beautiful. I think sometimes we do a little bit of a meditation. Sometimes there's a wee little chant. A lot of times there's not, you know, you're just invited to, you know, to, what was it? I'm stumbling here. The set an intention.
Yes.
You're invited to set an intention if that's what you'd like to do. And then it just turns into this like lovely, beautiful flow where you do the best you can. And if you realize you just are not going to be able to hold that pose, you get into whatever's comfortable and wait until the next. And I really love it. How about you, Margo?
Well, two things for me. One, I'm extremely ticklish, like to a ridiculous degree. Like if you took your pointer finger and just hovered over my body and said, I'm not touching you, it makes me tickle. I have to kind of like, I have to go into yoga like, okay, all right, you know, this is something that could happen. Don't giggle. Don't freak out. You know, so I've gotten used to that. But second, and I was once robbed at gunpoint when I was a teenager.
Oh my God, Margo.
Yeah. Yeah. So, when I get startled, it was a drive through it was a pretty bad experience, but when I'm startled, sometimes my mind kind of goes, oh my God, like what's going on. Yeah. So I have to like kind of warn people sometimes, like don't sneak up on me. And I'm warning you guys right now, like don't ever sneak up on me because.
Yeah. Cause at my first, I was just like, well, it'll be fun. I can tickle Margo. I can terrorize with that. And I'm like, well, now I can't do that. There goes that. Like, gosh.
Yeah. So also if you're a yoga instructor, maybe somebody was a crime victim at one point.
Right.
And so you gotta keep that in mind as well. So just, I don't mean to go too dark, but like every once in a while, it just happened
that
a couple of weeks
that you
ago.
You need to be aware of.
Yeah. You don't know what has happened to people, you know?
I teach a core class on Sundays and I was at the stereo and one of my favorite students, she was gone for a couple of months. She had a surgery. And she didn't realize, but she said, Margo, and she put her hand on my shoulder, like really hard, like, and the left shoulder, which is not my strong side, and I let out a scream that the whole YMCA could hear. And then I turned around and I started laughing. I'm like, I am so sorry. The whole room, like, and she was like, I feel so bad right now that I had explained to her, like, this is a thing that happened to me once. And so anyway, just throwing that out there, you guys. You know,
man,
but I'm okay. I'm okay. So my favorite yoga experience that was really kind of strange and wonderful was for Fit Bottom Girls. And I got to do summer solstice in Times Square and I got to do Bikram yoga and it wasn't with Mr. Bikram. Thankfully, but it was, well, we won't get into that, but it was Rahashri, his wife, and she led it, and it happened to be, it's outdoors, so I'm like, oh, I can handle Bikram outdoors. It was June in New York City, you know, on the pavement. It was super hot, super humid. Oh yeah. I was dying, but it was really fun. I mean, it was, you know, trying to find your bliss. When you can hear traffic everywhere and helicopters overhead and then she's playing this music and talking at the same time. It was like, it was pretty dope, I have to say. Like I really, really enjoyed it. So that's like a peak experience I've had with, the Fit Bottom Girls.
Aw.
Yeah. And then I just kind of want to transition a little bit because Kristen and I, like I said, we were on the interview with Jessamyn, and at one point, Jessamyn's talking about social media, and you guys will know when you listen to the interview, she kind of makes a point that she doesn't, you know, you can look at somebody on Instagram and think you know them, but you don't really, really know them, right? Like, there's things people keep to themselves. And I just want to know, do you guys have any kind of hard and fast rules about social media?
Yeah, for me, and it's funny, I'm actually preparing this presentation due to middle schoolers about social media, and there's this quote that I came across that's basically like, don't compare your everyday, like, lows to someone else's highlight reel. And I think that's kind of like what social media is for most people, right? It's their highlight reel, you know? And I think that that's human nature, that we share the best. For me, like, hard and fast rules, I tend to not share that much on social media unless it's like, I don't know, like a holiday or like a really big deal, because I don't feel comfortable personally with oversharing. It makes me feel kind of, I don't know, like you're either in my circle and you know my stuff or you're not. It's just kind of my personality a little bit, which is funny because, I mean, we have these websites and we talk about stuff, you know, and
yeah,
we are
authentic,
you know, but there's still something that I like to kind of save for myself, you know. But I think that as far as like any sort of rule that I have, it's usually only posting things that I would be okay with, like, ever coming back up. You know, like, I'm only going to post something if I'm okay with every single person, like, I love and care about seeing it, knowing it. Gwen, you know what I mean? Is it okay for my daughter to see later? If it's about her, like, I'm not going to, I mean, there's a lot of stuff where, like, parents complain about their kids or, you know, kind of share things, you know, mm-hmm, about like poop and, you know, I'm just, that's not my style. So yeah, I mean, I'm kind of a little reserved, but if there's something that I am really passionate about, even like on the political front or, you know, human rights issues, like I'm not afraid to stand up for what I believe in. So yeah. What about you, Kristen?
Well, I will kind of segue from something you just said. The one hard and fast rule I have is I will block your ass so fast from me being able to see you. I don't care really if you see me, but if you post a picture of your child's turds, like why does this happen? I am not a fan of pictures of brand new babies before they've been wiped off.
oh yeah, the gooey.
For, you know, someone who isn't very maternal, that's, you know, like, I do want to see your shining new baby. I'm super excited for you. Good job. But, you know, wipe the SpaghettiOs off first, please. So those are things where I draw a pretty hard and fast line. As far as me posting, it's funny because, Jen, you're so much more comfortable, like, on camera and talking to people than I am by, like, a lot. like, a lot. But I post. I share a lot more on social media than you do.
You do.
Yeah. And I don't know. I like the interaction. So I don't know. I don't think that I have anything other than I do tend to more or less post the highlight reel. And I've actually written about that because I wanted to sort of explore the idea of social media and authenticity and how those things work together, because I do feel strongly that, you know, social media isn't only sharing what you want others to see in that mm-hmm. moment, but it's also, you know, I mean, how many of you are keeping a photo album up to date right now? I've got all of these from my childhood of printed out pictures in photo albums with the years or the months or whatever written on the outside. I don't have those now. I have social media and I go back via a timeline and I look at what happened. So I think of it a little bit in terms of that being my new photo album. And what do I want to go back and look at? What do I want to see? What do I want to be reminded of? And, you know, I don't want to be visually reminded of the days when I have been hit with a bout of anxiety and I can't come out from under the covers and someone's got to deliver nachos to my mouth. Like those things happen and I'm candid about them. And I think that most people who know me really at all are aware that that's a struggle, and I don't ever want anyone to feel ashamed if that's happening.
Right.
And if sharing that publicly is something that's helpful to you, then awesome. You do you. For me, I am really fortunate that I have some people who I'm really close to in my life. Jen, for better or worse, you're one of them. Where I,
yeah, ditto.
And say like, hi, struggling. I think I'm going to be okay. But you know, if you don't hear from me the rest of the day, maybe check in. I might, you know, yeah. I might need a friend. I might need someone to listen to me cry. So that was a really long answer to saying I don't really have rules, but that's sort of where I land.
It's
what about you, Margo?
It's so much for you to think about. I mean,
You know, you said that the whole timeline thing on Facebook, you blew my mind because I was the same way. I obsessively collected pictures and had photo albums like my whole life. And then social media came along and I didn't have to print out the pictures anymore, right? I mean, they're just there whenever I want to access them. And that's the way I feel too. I try to stick mostly to the happy stuff. When I'm feeling depressed or anxious, I try not to really broadcast it to the world. I kind of stick to my close circle as well. And with Instagram especially, I try to keep it a happy place because Facebook and Twitter can be just such a garbage pile sometimes. So So my Instagram is just like my cats. You can follow me at Brooklyn Fitchick. I have the cutest cats in Brooklyn. And,
You do.
And, thank you. But, and just the happy things. That's where I kind of keep that. So Instagram is like for happy things. Facebook, it's more for like catching up on my friends. Whose birthday is going on right now? Is somebody moving? You know, did they get a promotion or something? Like that's how I kind of want to keep it. And I've actually given up on Pinterest. I don't really go on Pinterest anymore. Do you guys?
Really?
Yeah. I don't know why.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes if I'm looking for a certain recipe, I'll go on Pinterest. But yeah, I don't think.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem to be as popular as it used to be.
No. I mean, I wonder about that.
No, but it's, I mean, it is still hella good for recipes and finding workouts. And like when you're looking for, you know, some sort of an inspirational meme or anything like that, like, I mean, just think about like our page and our readers, like that definitely does really, really well.
Yeah, there's a ton.
Well, Pinterest actually, you're right, is more, much more positive than everything else.
Yeah.
That tends
to be a
positive place.
I don't think of it as. Yeah, it doesn't feel as social to me though. It feels more like
it's bookmarky. Yeah,
bookmarky.
Yeah, yeah. It's different.
Well, that was pretty cool, you guys. So I say we just jump right into this amazing interview with Jessamyn Stanley. Welcome back to the Fit Bottom Girls podcast. This is FBG Margot, and Kristen is on the line with me today. And our special guest is Jessamyn Stanley. Jessamyn is an internationally recognized yoga teacher and award-winning Instagram star. You can find her at My Name is Jessamyn. She has been profiled and or featured in a wide range of media outlets, including Good Morning America, New York Magazine, Glamour, Shape, People, and The Huffington Post. She is a huge proponent of body positivity and just released her first book, Everybody Yoga, which is designed to encourage everyone who wishes to practice yoga to do so without judgment. As for the motivation for her book, Jessamyn has stated she wrote Everybody Yoga for every fat person, every old person, and every exceptionally short person. She wrote it for anyone basically who is self-conscious about their body. When she's not on the road teaching, she lives in Durham, North Carolina. We are so happy to have her on the show today. Jessamyn, this is Margot. I'm going to ask you the first question. I first found you in Health Magazine. I saw the photo of you and I thought you were amazing and I was so glad you're going to be on our show. And Jessamyn, so I heard about your very first yoga experience. It was a Bikram experience. It was with your aunt and she took you there. She had previously drunk the Kool-Aid, as you say. So can you tell us a little bit about that?
She drank the Kool-Aid and she was like, you'll love it. It's going to change your life. Bikram yoga is amazing. And I was like, well, you know, I mean, I'm fat. I want to lose weight. You're saying it's great exercise. So why not? Let's go. And I went and I hated it. Everything about that experience was dreadful. I actually talk about it in the first part of my book, Everybody Yoga. It was so emotionally, it just put me in a place that I wasn't expecting. The room, if you've never practiced Bikram yoga before, it's practiced in a room that's about 104 degrees. So it's extremely hot. And for a new, even for people who have been doing it for years, it's really intense. But for a brand new practitioner, especially for a teenage brand new practitioner, a fat teenage practitioner, it was like, this is the most awful experience that could even happen. And I was sweating in ways that truly before that, I didn't even know that humans could sweat like that. And like I'm sweating from the backs of my kneecaps, from my eyebrows, and just like all these things that I'm like, what is going on? And probably one of the worst moments of the class, I made it about a third of the way through. And then I was like, I can't take it. The heat is going to kill me. These poses are awful. How is anyone even able to do this? Even the breathing, just breathing in that room was so difficult. And I was like, I just got to get out of here. And so I left the room, which they always tell you not to do in hot classes. And I quickly found out the reason they tell you not to do that is because when you re-enter the room, your body is going to go into kind of like a version of shock because of the temperature shifts. And I got so nauseous when I finally came back into the room, and then I left for good. And I was like, I'm never doing this again. I can't, because it was such a markedly awful experience. And it took 7 years before I ended up going back to the practice. And I only went back because one of my classmates, when I was in graduate school, she encouraged me to go with her because I was going through a period of depression. I was in a relationship that I'd been in since high school when it was ending, which, of course, if anyone has had something like that happen, you know that the drama of it makes it just the worst thing ever. But for me at the time, it was a lot. And on top of the fact that I was just very confused about my life and what I was doing, and I was very, very unhappy. And my friend Anna, she was like, oh my God, she drank the Kool-Aid. She was like, oh my God, come to Bikram Yoga. You'll love it. And I was like, I'm not doing that. I flat out said no because I'd had such a bad experience the first time. And that's why I'm always really understanding of new practitioners who are very hesitant to try yoga or who have a really bad experience right off the bat, because I'm like, yo, I get it. I literally had that exact experience. But when she wore me down, I think the only reason that I eventually decided to go back is because they had a Groupon pass to the studio. It was like $30, unlimited classes. And I thought, you know, what's the harm? At the very least, I've just lost $30. I mean, at the most, I've lost $30. And I went and I loved it. Everything about it that was so difficult was still difficult. The heat was exactly the same. The intensity of the postures was exactly the same. The breathing, the same. But I didn't realize that in my day-to-day life, I had not been extending myself. I never stepped out of boundaries. I never, you know, tried to do new things. All I did was, I was basically sleepwalking through life. It's like you wake up, go to class, go to work, have the same relationships with the same, or have the same conversations with the same people, never evolve, go to sleep, wake up, do the exact same thing over again. And that was such a debilitating cycle for me. And I didn't even realize it until I put myself in these physical situations with the asana, the poses, that took me so far out of my comfort zone and so far beyond where I thought my lines and my boundaries were, that it totally changed my perspective about life. And I saw all of these areas off of my yoga mat where I was still holding on to that mentality of like, you know, I have to stay in these boxes and I can only go this far and boundaries are important. And it helped me to step over boundaries and to be more open to life in general.
I love that. And I think that I'm sure that you hear this from everybody, but like my first yoga experience was terrible. I know a lot of people, you know, it
Everyone.
Was because,
mm-hmm.
yeah. And it's cause it's, you know, until you know what you're getting into, like it is in just so many ways, so different. And for the longest time, I would get really pissed at the 80-year-old man over in the corner who was bending himself into a pretzel and balancing on his pinky. And it took me a little while to realize like, you know, hey man, you do you, like that is awesome and amazing and really should only be inspiring rather exactly. than making me feel angry that I can't do it. Like, so I've got some work to do.
Cool. We live in such a competitive society, and I think that that's kind of the difference. That's one of the negative things about the fitness industry that the yoga world sort of has absorbed and that I would like to see us release, is this need to be doing exactly the same thing as the person next to you, or like to be in competition with the other people who are in the room, or to feel like your worth is only, it can only be qualified comparison to other people. And that kind of mentality is so sketchy in a yoga environment, because particularly when you're in a class with someone who, you know, the 80-year-old man who's bending himself into a pretzel and bouncing on one pinky, it's like, yeah. You know, we have no concept of what this person has had to go through in their life to achieve this physical posture, and also the things that are still going on in that person's life that make the work of the asana really necessary. And instead, all we see is like, that shape, I want to make that shape. I think I should be able to make that shape. And it's just like, I'm very short-sighted, and I've totally fallen prey to that. I feel you completely.
Yeah. But since then, I've come a really long way. Like you, I was reading that you love doing yoga right in your own living room, and I agree. But one of the things, I think it can be really hard for people who are new to yoga, who want to do it at home, even if they're following along with a video or a streaming class, it can be really difficult, I think, to know what each pose is supposed to feel like, because if you're not really like on the right plane, or, you know, if you're extending in a way that you think looks right, but you're going, you know, your knees trailing over your ankle or whatever, you know, it can be a little bit dangerous, or at least it can not be as effective as it should be. So I wondered if you have any thoughts or suggestions on how someone who's really quite new to yoga could approach a home practice. Like, are there certain types of yoga that you would recommend they look into, or maybe specific virtual sources or instructors who you think are really good at guiding people who just don't have much to base their poses on?
You know, I think the point that you're making is really, really important, but maybe not. I'm going to come at it from a perspective that maybe is not necessarily expected. I think that it's a misunderstanding that yoga is so serious that, like, if your alignment isn't exactly right, or if you're not aiming for it to be exactly right, then you're not getting the benefits of the posture. The whole point of the practice is really to just move with your breath, so that even if the posture does not look like exactly like the person next to you, or if you're at home, even if it doesn't look like the person who is teaching your class, or the person who is, who are on the or whatever it is, that doesn't mean that you're not getting it. And that all we need to do is be in spaces where we're free to accept our own experience, and we're not judging our experience based on the physical representations that are shown to us. And I think it's extremely difficult to get that experience in a classroom, because of what we were talking about before, this need to compare ourselves against everyone else, so that you may think that, you know, like in a home environment, like let's use Warrior One pose as an example. Like there's so many complexities to this pose, and it's a very quote basic yoga pose. You see it in lots of different styles of yoga. It's usually one of the first poses, standing postures that people learn. And if you continue to study the posture, it is so complex. There are so many different little things to work into, and people practice it constantly, not hitting those points. So from a theoretical standpoint, it's like, well, you're not really getting the benefits of the posture because you're not doing it. And I mean, I see people practicing it not to the full extent all the time, in photographs, in videos, all the time. And it's fine, because that is that person's expression of the posture. And I think it's very difficult to really get into that work in some kinds of classroom environments, because modern yoga has moved so much into the fitness sphere, where there's so much obsession over the postures and like getting it exactly right, that you have people who, you know, can't appreciate the yoga, the real yoga, the uniting of the breath with the motion, uniting of the breath with the body. And they get discouraged because they're not doing it, you know, quote, exactly right. So I think that the most important thing whenever you're approaching a new practice is to just be open to what's going on in your body, and accept that your body belongs to you, and that the experiences that have led up to this exact moment, you don't need to feel like you have to apologize for them, and that those experiences are going to make your asana reflect your experiences are going to be reflected in the asana. So like, if you can't jut your foot further forward because you have a knee injury, that's fine. You know, if you can't extend your arm quite as far over because you ripped your rotator cuff when you were in high school, that's fine. You just move to the place that you can. And so I say all of this to say that when you're selecting an online class or when you're selecting whatever resources you're going to use, I don't think it's necessary to start with a specific style of yoga, because no matter what you do, or even like a specific level, because no matter what you do, you're always going to be a beginner. And even people who have been practicing for years, the idea is to always come back to it with this idea of I'm a beginner, so that each time is like the first time, and that you should always be paying attention, especially if you have any kind of teacher who's there. And if you're starting a home practice, I mean, you can start without online classes, but I really think it's important to have some kind of visual representation in front of you of what you should be doing. But you don't necessarily need to be obsessing over what that person is doing. And you also don't need to feel like you have, like if you're not in a classroom with a teacher watching over you, that you're not getting the benefits of the posture. Because the benefit of it is moving with your breath. That's it. Like once you're doing that, that's it. Because the reality of the situation is that these asana are really just calisthenics at the end of the day that have been matched into a lot of the asana that we practice is just calisthenics, and it's been mixed in with some traditional yoga postures, but most hatha yoga postures, there are not that many, and most of them are not really that complicated. So I think that when you really start to see that, like, it's just about breathing, as long as you show up on your mat and you're breathing, you're practicing. And as long as you, because your body, you're going to know when you're on the verge of injuring yourself. And I think that there's an over obsession with injury in yoga. As someone who has been injured themselves practicing yoga, and no, I don't know a teacher or a serious practitioner who has not suffered some kind of yoga injury. It's not usually like, oh, you know, I stepped my foot the wrong way and then I turned it over, and it's more likely that's going to happen when you're running or when you're like, and that's again with the fitness industry kind of pushing into the yoga space. We take those same ideas and just put them in. So there's this thing of like, I don't know what I'm doing. This thing it's from another era. It's from another age. I might be doing it wrong. And it's like, you just try before you determine that you're going to injure yourself. Because sometimes what I notice with people, particularly with larger bodied new students, like if you're fat bodied and you can't move as fast as everyone else, or like you've been taught your whole life that you're only supposed to do certain kinds of exercise. And then you tell this person like, no, you need to do gentle yoga. You need to do restorative yoga. You need to do yin yoga. These are all awesome things, but that same person should be allowed the opportunity to try, like, more vigorous styles or more complex styles. And I don't think there's a really easy way to, because sometimes if you start with a more slow paced style of yoga, it's very difficult to transition to more difficult styles. So I would just say that you don't have to start with one style or another. If you're very, very concerned about your safety, if you have any issues with mobility, if you have a shortness of breath, or if you have difficulty moving quickly, then it's totally understandable to want to start with a slower paced practice, or to start with something that's like, maybe you're only doing one or two postures a day, or you're just moving. But that has more to do with the individual person and not just with all beginners, period. So I would really encourage everyone to just throw themselves into any style that seems like it could be appealing. In Everybody Yoga, I give a lot of information about some very popular lineages, modern yoga lineages that you can find all over the country. And I think that that's probably a pretty good starting place for someone who's just trying to determine what kind of yoga could work well for their life. That answer your question?
That was amazing. I took a lot of notes right there. Thank you.
Part of the reason why I'm in this space about it is because I didn't start with a gentle style or a beginner style. Bikram yoga is very much an all levels practice, but it isn't. Can I swear on this podcast? It's cool. Cause I was like, Cool, dope. It's like an ass-kicking class, like, for everybody. And I've taken it so many times in so many places, and I have watched, like, I remember one time in particular, I was in the middle of a Bikram class, and I looked back behind me, and the guy who was right behind me is a teacher at that studio. He's an amazing teacher, has the most beautiful practice, and he was laid out on his mat in Shavasana, done. Like, it was done. And he's been practicing this class, this exact same class for years and years, and I'm like, if this dude can get the shit kicked out of him, then it's okay if I'm tired. You know what I mean? So it's like, you just want to put yourself into class environments that are going to make you feel comfortable, and then no matter the pacing, no matter what y'all are actually doing, you can make it. You can find your way. But you're not going to know what you're doing right off the bat.
Right.
There's a learning curve for everything in life, you know.
Exactly.
You just gotta, you know, understand you're gonna look like a fool for a little bit. That's all.
Exactly. Exactly.
That's not a big deal.
That's cool.
But that's learning.
And I think that we kind of fear looking like a fool. You know, there's a tendency to be like, no, I don't want to look stupid. I did this thing last week when I was in Seattle. We shot a video where I went around to just random people on the streets of Seattle and introduced them to yoga. And we would just like do yoga literally just in the middle of downtown Seattle. We're like starting sun salutes. And there were a few people that said no. And the number one reason why they said no is I don't want to look stupid. And it's so interesting to me because there's such a fear. There's more fear of what other people will think of you than of not looking within yourself. Like, we're more afraid of what other people will think of us than we are. It's just, it's crazy to me. And I think that fear is what gets people to not even enter a yoga space to begin with.
So your Instagram account is literally everything. I've been following you since I saw that great photo of you in Health Magazine. It was in the April issue. Were you in Seattle when you did that photo shoot?
I am not even remembering. This is the worst part about about press is that I'm honestly way more introverted and humble than all of this makes me seem. And so I'm like, which article are we talking about?
You're doing a split, and it's like by a bridge, and I feel like that's the needle behind you. Is that the whatever? Anyway,
no. If I'm wearing purple, I know exactly what you're talking about. No, that was in New York. That was like right by the Brooklyn Bridge, I think. I might be wrong about the bridge, but it was in New York.
Okay.
Yeah.
I got you.
Oh, yeah.
So I started following you on Instagram, and like I said, it's literally everything. And I noticed that in addition to inspiring people with your poses and your photos and stuff, I feel like you learn sometimes from your fans as well. So I was hoping maybe you can describe what you've learned from your hundreds of thousands of followers.
You know, I never aspired to have a followership like this, and it's very, very strange to me that there's even any kind of interaction with other people. And to me, my Instagram is very much just a reflection of what's going on in my life at that time and what my modern yoga practice really looks like. And to me, it's inspirational to see people who have decided to make a change in the way that they see themselves and are really out reflecting. Like, I don't take credit for anything anytime that someone says that I've inspired them, I don't really take credit for that. But what inspires me is when people change their own lives. And I've seen a lot of that through social. And then also, social media creates space to have conversations with people that you may never have had conversations with before or otherwise. And for me, that kind of interaction has been really, really awesome, because otherwise I would just stay in like my little yoga bubble where I always think, you know, I think what I think and my friends think what they think and we all talk to each other, but we don't branch out. And it's awesome to be a part of a larger, diverse yoga community, a much more diverse and widespread community than what's immediately available to me in person. So that is awesome. That's a really cool thing about it.
For sure. Now, in addition to teaching, you know, where you live and really going all over the world, teaching and speaking and everything. You're also a fellow member of the 1440 Multiversity faculty, which, Jen, who is not here, but she and I are also teaching a program there. And I think yours is actually taking place like the week before ours in August, out
sounds
in California.
Like it sounds like it's going to be an awesome August.
Oh my gosh. So awesome. Out among the redwoods. So yeah, can you tell us a little bit about what your program will include? And we'll make sure to put in the show notes, you know, the link and like how people can come and, you know, do this program with you.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we talked a lot about the home yoga practice during this cast, and that's the focus of my 1440 course, is that a lot of people have difficulty building a home yoga practice on their own. It seems really intimidating, but that is my wheelhouse. My yoga practice changed completely whenever I started bringing the things that I had learned in classrooms and the things that I was seeing online, and I brought that into my own personal space. And making a home yoga practice for yourself means that you always have a salvation. You always have a place to come back to. And so that weekend at 1440, we're going to spend the whole weekend building it, learning how to build a home yoga practice for yourself, and seeing how easy it is to weave it into your day. And it's going to be perfect for a novice practitioner, like someone who's always wanted to practice yoga but never felt like there was a safe space for them to come to. But then also for people who have been practicing for years, who even if you go to classes, it can be very difficult to transition from classes to a home practice. So it's perfect for people who even have been practicing yoga for quite some time. And we're just going to spend the weekend really digging into what makes a home practice, how to sequence on your own, and then we'll end the weekend by doing a flow that every person in the class contributes to, so that everyone gets the experience of building a yoga flow and then seeing how the flow that touches their heart can also touch the heart of other people. And then you can bring that back into your own life, into your own practice, and walk away with a home yoga practice that you'll have forever.
That's fantastic. I'm sorry, I'm taking notes too. You're a great guest, I have to say.
Well, I mean, it's like, I wanted to do something where it would be, you know, a space for someone who has always wanted to go on a yoga retreat, but maybe even never felt comfortable walking into a yoga class before. Someone who is looking for love in their life and maybe has been through something at home where their home has changed, and that may be their physical home, it may be their the home, the box that they live in, the people that are around them, and that this weekend will give an opportunity to really just tap into themselves, to really learn about the person that is always, the spirit that's always within themselves, and to make a lasting connection that will continue even after we leave the redwood forest.
I mean, can you tell us a little bit about how the practice of yoga has helped you spiritually?
It's very funny because I think that when I first got into practicing yoga, I was so consumed by, you know, the emotional benefits, and then I was intrigued by the physical benefits. And it took a while for me to really be open to the spirituality of yoga, because I, like many people, have a deep association between spirituality and religion. And I grew up in a very religious household, and it was very difficult for me to reconcile the feelings that had built up for me over time with the whole concept of religion and the inherent oneness of spirituality, and that every breath that you take in a yoga practice is a connection to the other living creatures and beings on this earth, and that if, like we said in the beginning, if breath and motion together make the yoga practice, then every breath of the practice is a spiritual practice. And so for me, that making that leap has been a long ride. Like I've been practicing yoga for quite some time before I really started to come to that realization and really start to own the sensations, because I hear this all the time from people who are just starting out in a yoga practice. They're like, I just feel so good. I feel good after yoga in a way that I didn't feel good, like don't feel good from other kinds of exercise. And that's why people specifically come back to yoga. And then when you bring up spirituality, those same people will be like, oh, but I don't do it for the spiritual benefits.
Right.
You know, I do it for the physical benefits. And the reality is that there is no version of yoga that is not spiritual. The whole thing is spiritual. And it is counterintuitive to Western thought, but that is the reality. And I think that the sooner that you understand that and the sooner that you see just how much of our lives are based on energy and how much of it is based on that connection, that breath connection. In yoga, it's called prana. It's just the cosmic energy that unites us all. That once you see the prana connection between all living beings, it becomes, the practice opens up something completely different. It goes from being, you know, this fun exercise thing that you do, and maybe every day, it goes from that to being something that you cannot live without, that you can tell in your spirit when you are not practicing, that you can tell that the stretches that at once were physical become stretches of your mind and your spirit as well. And that transition, again, has been very slow coming for me, but it's definitely the most worthwhile understanding that I could have ever come to about this practice.
Let's talk a little bit about your book. You've mentioned a few things about it, but what else do our listeners need to know about it? And, you know, people who have been following you online and have, you know, listened to everything that you have to say, what are they going to get out of this book that they haven't already heard from you?
Well, the interesting thing is that, I was just talking to someone about this, so Instagram in particular makes it seem like you really get to know someone, you know, like you, and I feel like there are a lot of people who feel like they really know me because they've been following me for a long time, maybe even before Instagram on Tumblr, and that they have seen my practice grow from just being in my 750 square foot apartment, like pushing everything out of one corner of the room. They've seen it grow from that to traveling across the world, and that there's a great feeling of intimacy. But the reality of the situation is that you're basing that intimacy on less than 900 photos of a person's life taken over like a 6-year period. And that is very little. There's very little information that's coming through. That even in my reflections and ruminations, that I'm never really being, in my opinion, I'm not really being that intimate. I feel like there's only 1% of my life maybe that's on the internet. And that's for a reason, because I'm a very private person, and I don't, as much as it may seem that I'm showing a lot of myself physically in photos, I'm not really showing that much about my life. But so much of the things that I don't talk about is way more relevant to a yoga practice and to my own life than what's actually shown online. And so in Everybody Yoga, I'm able to tell the stories that I don't tell on Instagram that are not appropriate for, I think, that kind of audience because they are so private. But if you're really going to figure out how and why I started practicing yoga, you have to understand that backstory. I mean, a perfect example of this is I had been practicing yoga for quite some time. I had been, I wasn't teaching. This was about a year before I went into teacher training, and I got a DUI. And this was while I was on Instagram, while I was, I think I'd even had some press by this point. I was getting like kind of popular on social media, and there's a 2 to 3 day period where I was not on social media at all because I was in jail. And that was never talked about online. I did not talk about my recovery after that experience, but that's one of the stories that's in the book because that's a very huge part of my practice. And it's things like that where you may think that you know someone, and you may like you see a picture of a headstand and you're like, oh my gosh, a headstand in the underwear. And it's like, oh my gosh, I know this person. I know, but like, you don't know the half of it. And what you really don't know is that the noise and the fuckery of your life is also happening in my life. And that if you have drama in your life and I have drama in my life, then what does that mean about it? Like, and I practice yoga, then that must mean that you can practice yoga too. So by telling the stories of my life that in my opinion aren't really fit for Instagram, I think that it creates space for more people to find and see themselves in the practice.
So leaving the Instagram world, because I like you, I'm an instructor, but I'm also on social media, but I feel like I'm very different when I'm instructing people in a room versus how I, relate to people. You know that. So I feel sometimes when I walk into that room and I start a class, like I leave it like, oh my God, they taught me so much today. You know, they held a mirror to me. And I was just wondering, did you ever, you know, do you have any lessons that you've learned from your students that you feel comfortable sharing?
You know, I think that Yeah. But it's less about like specific moments and more just I learn from the way that people interact with their own bodies, the way that they, you know, the way that the energy changes in the room whenever people become more comfortable with themselves. And I feel like the teaching practice and the personal practice are very separate from one another because the teaching practice is really you learning. I mean, I feel like I'm constantly learning from the people who practice with me. And so in that kind of environment, I'm just trying to absorb all of those different energetic changes. And I think that the thing that I've really learned from being a teacher is knowing that I am not, like, really being in the room with them. You can plan out exactly what you're going to say beforehand, and you can say, like, you know, this is what the sequence is going to be, but not until you're feeling with the students how the flow is actually moving. There's no way to really know what's going on. You know what I mean? So it's like that experience of just allowing myself to be open to the energy of the room is a huge learning experience. And I feel like it's very hard for Western teachers to get to that place of openness because we're taught so much about this precision. You know, like you want to, you know, like having your sequence ready, you know, knowing like what the benefits are going to be beforehand so that, you know, you can, and making sure that you're, you know, giving people exactly what they need or what they want and asking them what they want. And I think that for me, it's just really important to be open to what people are actually feeling, which is going to change depending on where I am or what the mood is or what's going on. But the one thing that I'll say about people from, and I've been having taught all over the world at this point, I feel like all human beings are essentially the same in that we all just want to be happy and we all just want to be comfortable. And whenever you give someone positive reinforcement and positive feedback, whenever maybe they have not received positive feedback in years, you know, like people who maybe you haven't even gotten a hug in years, and to have somebody say, you look awesome, great job, good job, keep digging into that, and to see them change, that's a huge learning experience for me, because in my own personal practice, I'm just like, you know, I'm digging through my own bullshit, but whenever I'm like engaging with somebody else who is like just trying to change their own mindset, change their energy, it's an incredible one. There's no equivalent to that learning experience. And I think that it's the most worthwhile time that I spend as a teacher because they're definitely teaching me more about the universe than I could ever teach them.
So I love that you're a huge proponent of upcycling items that you just happen to have in your home to use as yoga props.
Absolutely.
I love it. So can you give a few examples of some of the more interesting items you've repurposed?
Yeah, I'm a big believer in upcycling because so much, when I first started practicing, I just could not afford yoga props. I couldn't, and I came from a lineage of yoga that does not, Bikram yoga does not utilize props. And so when I first heard of yoga props, I was like, oh, I don't want to use those because they make me seem weak. You know, like if I use a block, that means that I'm not really that strong. But that, of course, this is another product of the fitness industry that it's like, you're not good enough unless you're doing it all the way. And once I got beyond that point, I was like, okay, well, I guess I just got to make some blocks. And so two of the blocks that I still have, I mean, whenever I'm running low on blocks, like if I'm teaching a semi-private at home and we still need extra blocks, I will still pull these blocks out. It's two cell phone cases that I duct tape together and then a VHS box set of Star Wars, like the three that are in the middle, and those all duct tape together, and they are beautiful supports. They're awesome blocks, and they cost me $0. And then I used to use my dog's old dog leash as my yoga strap, and then I had a scarf that was just laying around that I also used as a strap, and then my mom eventually knit me a strap, and I used that strap for a really long time. And now, I mean, I have all kinds of props. People send me things all the time. It's, you know, like I have a massive collection of things now, but I still have those other props and like I think they're perfectly fine. And I feel like it's fun to buy things. It's fun to have the nicest stuff. And this is not me. Like there are awesome yoga blocks, yoga straps, bolsters, all of these things are out there. But if you just need to make something real quick, you know, grab your copy of Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows and you have a yoga block. That's, you're ready to go.
Well, you are just, like I said, a fantastic guest. I want to thank you so much for taking just some time to speak to us today. I know our audience is going to love this. We have a lot of instructors and a lot of yogis that listen to our show. So I know they're going to really enjoy this. But I get to ask you the last question, if you're okay with that, Kristen.
Ooh.
Go for it.
Okay.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun. Right? We ask everybody this question when they do the show. Jessamine. What was the last song you listened to before you did this podcast interview?
That's such a good question. Oh,
go for it.
Let me try to remember. Oh, what would it have been? I mean, it was, it's a man's world by James Brown.
Oh,
it's a great song.
That's
yes.
a great song.
I was literally just listening to a song. What was it? It's a great song. It's a classic. James Brown is amazing. And I also, that's actually from one of my yoga playlists. So if you're looking for like my yoga tone, I do listen to James Brown.
Ooh.
I play Sex Machine in my classes sometimes.
Oh yes. Oh yeah. That's a good one. It's a good jam.
Do you have a Spotify playlist or anything like that you use or is it just like your personal one?
I use a bunch of different, I have playlists that are on Spotify that I made that are my yoga playlists. I don't listen to a lot of, because my music taste is so eclectic and I just like to listen to like random songs that I've liked over the course of my life. That's kind of what my playlists are and they're called Namaste and Om Shanti. But I also listen to playlists by Francesca Medina, which are on,
talked to her.
Did you really?
We did. Oh, we loved her.
Oh, she's amazing.
She is everything. So she has some really great Spotify playlists. And the one that I'm really into right now is Warm Nights. It's like Warm Something and Summer Nights or something like that. I can't remember. But on Warm Vibes and Summer Nights. That's it. It's awesome. She's amazing.
She's on our next show.
I love her. I'll just talk to her. Oh, my God. I love her so much.
Margo, am I remembering this correctly, but she named a James Brown song too, or am I making that up?
No,
I think you're making that up. I'm sorry. I don't think, I'm sorry, Kristen.
I wanted
that to be the case.
I know. It's something else and I can't, I'm not that. Yeah, I just edited that episode recently, but she was wonderful and we can't wait. It's going to air, well, by the time, if you look at our Fit Bottom Girls, look us up wherever you get your podcast and it'll be dropping this Sunday.
Yeah.
For sure.
I just remembered it being like a really good feel good.
Yeah.
Not super recently released jam. So,
I go to her for everything natural health, everything. Like she's my touchstone. So that's so exciting. Anyway.
You're in great company.
Yeah.
On this podcast. So Jessamine, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. It was great chatting with you guys, and I hope we're able to do it again sometime.
That's it for this episode of the Fit Bottom Girls podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in, and if you like what you're hearing, feel free to subscribe to us on whatever platform you use to listen to podcasts. And if you love what you're hearing, yay, leave a few stars and a review. That would be amazing. Be sure to follow us on all of our social media channels for Fit Bottom Girls, Fit Bottom Zen, Fit Bottom Eats, and Fit Bottom Mamas. You just spell it all out and you will find us. Facebook, Twitter, Snapchat, Pinterest, Instagram. Believe me, you will find us. If you want to reach out to say hi, have a question about a recent episode or interview, feel free to email us at podcast@fitbottomgirls.com. And if books and movies are also your thing, check out the other podcast I co-host called Book Versus Movie, which you can find anywhere where you search for podcasts. Thank you so much once again for dropping by. And remember, a life filled with laughter is a life well lived. Bye.